We're right at 10. We're waiting for Representative Nathanson and Dr. Dewey, I think. Is Representative Nathanson, great. So we're just waiting on, am I right, Couture? We're just waiting, there he is, Dr. Dewey.
There he is.
We're all here, is that right? Okay. Timely group as usual. So Couture, I notice we've got things recording. Are we ready to go?
Sure.
Okay. So I'll bang the virtual gavel and welcome everybody to our meeting of the State Debt Policy Advisory Commission. We've got various people in various locales dealing with various implications of our recent weather, but I appreciate everybody being flexible. Recognize in particular, Senator Taylor mentioned she's been having some challenges with the internet. So while she doesn't have her camera on, she's here. So that's fine, but just make sure she speaks up. She has comments or questions since we won't be able to see her. And there she is, at least temporarily. With that, we have the fairly standard agenda today to hear from the world-class debt management team at Treasury on our numbers. As usual, we welcome your comments and questions. This team has a great presentation that will take us through the process and the numbers. The goal, of course, is to get your feedback and consensus around a report that we will submit to the governor and the legislature based on our latest numbers. Since we were last together, we've had some changes in the debt management team, and very excited that Jaime Alvarez has taken the helm of that team. He's going to lead our presentation today and involve a number of his team. So I think those are the only major comments I need to make as an introduction, and I'll turn it over to Jaime. And again, please, anyone who's here, Director Leslie, Senator Taylor, Representative Nathanson, Dr. Dewey, welcome your comments and questions as we go along. Jaime, over to you.
Great. Thank you so
and
much.
If you would introduce yourself too, just because not everybody has had the benefit of meeting you directly, that would be great as well, please.
Sure, absolutely. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity to present to you all and the commissioners today. Again, my name is Jaime Alvarez. I'm the Director of Debt Management Division here at Oregon State Treasury. I joined Treasury about 2 years ago. I served as Deputy Director under Jacqueline Knights before her departure a little bit last year. So very excited to take on the role, and you know that we definitely have a great team. So hopefully we can get through this presentation and answer any questions you may have. Thank you. So here today we have some members of my team who will help me present today. We have Colin Kuzar, who is our debt manager in our group, Couture Vasant, senior debt analyst, and Michael Thompson, senior debt analyst, also in our group. So I would like to advise that a draft of the full report was sent on last Friday, the 12th. So if you have not received it, please let us know. We'll make sure and give you send over a copy to you all. So this presentation. The presentation that we're making today will provide a summary of the full report. Our goal is in this meeting is to review the summary, answer any questions you may have, and discuss any proposed changes or clarifications to the report itself. Okay, we can turn to the next slide. Okay, so our team here will cover a number of different topics today. We will talk about the outstanding debt position of the state, our general fund capacity as calculated by our internal models, the lottery revenue debt capacity, and we'll talk about the net tax supported debt, which is the overall indebtedness of the state as determined by the bond rating agencies. We will discuss some debt issuance considerations along with some emerging areas of concern that we've also highlighted a couple in other presentations, and not necessarily related to state debt, but perhaps contingent liabilities of the state. And then finally, we'll make concluding remarks. Next slide, please. One more. Okay. So the graph here in this slide shows trends of the aggregate state debt levels for the listed types of debt obligations that we have outstanding here. We have pension obligation bonds. We have general fund supported and self-supporting debt. We have appropriation debt, which includes certificates of participation. And lastly, direct revenue bonds, which includes debt issued by ODOT, Highway User Tax Program, housing single family and multifamily programs, lottery, and the bond bank. In aggregate, we have approximately $12.54 billion of outstanding long-term debt, and this figure is as of June 30th, 2023. Next slide. On this slide, we zoom into the general fund obligation debt. Again, also as of June 30th, 2023, the state had approximately $7.5 billion in outstanding GO debt that's represented here in the chart. We can break that down by approximately $5.17 billion for general fund supported debt and approximately $2.34 billion for dedicated funds such as Oregon Vets, higher education, and pension obligation bonds, and others.
I'm sorry. I thought you were at a breakpoint. Just a quick question also to encourage people to ask them when they occur to them. I imagine you're going to get into this later, but the vertical axis here having dollars, is it reasonable to conclude that this is as a percentage relatively stable following our revenue as well?
It is. I will point out though that you know there is a you can kind of notice as far as the breakdown of the different categories that there is more of a concentration on Article Q bonds. But that's just because of the state going that way and accessing that type of debt vehicle.
More flexibility. Thank you.
Right. So again, you know, to add a little bit more on the Q bonds, you know, that continues to grow with an increased focus on projects that are state owned or operated type facilities, and also funding for LIFT program bonds, and just going away from utilization to appropriation type debt. Next slide. So here we have a breakdown of the direct revenue bonds outstanding by individual bond program. So $2.66 billion for ODOT, approximately $1.3 billion for lottery revenue bonds, and $946 million for housing bonds. Approximately $51.6 million for Oregon Business Development Department. Next slide. So on this slide, we have a quick snapshot of our state's bond rating by credit. The rating agencies have mentioned a few factors that support the state's high credit quality, the state's stable budgetary position, structurally balanced budget, strong liquidity position, and you know the support that supports budgetary flexibility and growing reserves, proactive management with the willingness to correct course and fix any presented structural imbalances, and sound financial controls. I will point out here an addition from last year that you will notice is the inclusion of Kroll to the group of rating agencies that the state uses. The state engaged Kroll last year during our lottery transaction as a means to diversifying the credit reports that are provided to the potential investors for our bonds. We were very pleased when Kroll assigned the lottery credit with this highest rating of AAA. This AAA rating complemented the AAA rating from S&P that the lottery credit already possessed.
Thank you. They're a new firm to me, too. I'm glad to hear about that. Notice Representative Nathanson has her hand up. Representative Nathanson, please.
Thank you very much. A quick comment here. I am always very impressed by the information on this slide, which explains our high credit rating. And I'm very pleased that you've brought that to light again today. That's something that is of great value to us. And it's obvious that some people really get it, that it's important to protect that. My question is on the previous slide. If you could go back one, if that's not too, thank you. You mentioned business development department bonds. Could you say just a little bit more about what those bonds are used for?
Well, the primary purpose of these bonds are for economic development type projects. It's been a little while since we've issued these type of bonds. For the most part, they've been issuing. There's been a focus on the use of trying to leverage private activity bonds, depending on the actual what the projects entail. But for the most part, they're used for economic development type projects.
There's some danger and speculation on my part, but I'm having memories of the special public works and water treatment and things like that. Does that fit in this category, Jaime?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
I think thank you for the response. I want to just reflect on this for a few minutes and probably think about it over the next couple of days. I just want to reach a comfort level that we're using the right bonds for the right kinds of projects, particularly in that area.
Sure.
Okay. Thanks.
You bet. Okay.
Okay. Conduit revenue bonds. In this slide, these bonds are issued by a governmental unit to finance a project for a third party. So these are securities and are obligations of that third party borrower that do not constitute the debt of the state or the issuing governmental agency. The state currently has four authorized and active conduit revenue bond programs. These programs are for Oregon Facilities Authority, Industrial Development Revenue Bonds, Housing Development Revenue Bonds, and Beginning and Expanding Farmer Loan Revenue Bonds. Under these programs, the debt is paid by the entity on whose behalf the bonds are issued. The state is considered the issuer, but has no obligation to the bonds or the associated debt service.
Jaime, the total I see 3.31. Are they relatively evenly split amongst those four, or is there one that dominates?
No, there is more. I mean, it's not evenly split. I would have to go back and figure out exactly what the breakout is, but there is quite a bit more issuance side or activity side, especially on OFA and on housing, of course.
Yeah.
The other two industrial development revenue bonds are probably third in that, and then
farmers.
But there is more of a disparity between the four groups.
Okay, thank you.
And yes, as you mentioned, the total outstanding between the four is $3.3 billion. So we can provide maybe a little bit more detail on going forward.
Not a big deal. I was just curious. Thank you.
Next slide. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Couture Vasant, who will go over the next section for our group.
Thank you, Couture. Thank you, Jaime.
So in this section, we're going to talk about the general fund supported debt capacity. Going to the next slide, we can see that there are a number of programs that are supported by claims on the general fund of the state, and they are paid out of general fund appropriations. These programs can be split into two broad categories. The general obligation bonds is basically almost all of it. Appropriation credits used to be somewhat meaningful, but over the years they've been run down, and we only have $85 million left for the appropriation credits, and that's in the form of the certificates of participation. And the funding that used to come from the certificate of participation has now been replaced by 11Q issuance. So we're going to focus on the general obligation bonds. These are bonds that are backed by the full faith and credit of the state. They're issued by the state with a pledge to use all available resources and tax revenue to meet the debt service requirement in terms of interest payments, as well as payment of principal. And down below, you see a list of the various programs. And the in parentheses, you see 11G and 11H and so on. So those are the legal provisions that allow the state to authorize the bonds for those specific purposes. You also see certain percentages at the very end of, for example, the pollution control bonds. The 60% refers to the amount of these bonds that is paid out by the general fund. The rest is self-supported. So in some cases, you have 100% reliance on the general fund, for example, the seismic programs. In some cases, like pollution controls and alternative energy, the general fund pays only a proportion of the debt service requirements, the rest coming from self-support. And as we move down the list, almost at the very bottom, you see the 11Qs. They are growing very rapidly, and they comprise 44% of the total GO outstanding balances. 91% of that is reliant on general fund sources. Moving on to the next slide. So what we do is we use a general fund debt capacity model to calculate how much capacity the state has over a certain forecast horizon, going all the way to 2033. And what we do is, for the current biennium, we assume that the issuance is going to be whatever has been authorized by the bond bill. In the case of the 2023 legislature, $2.15 billion was authorized for general fund supported debt. We take that into account, assume that is fully issued. We also take into account that there is $5.17 billion of general fund supported debt outstanding as of June 30, 2023, and that debt service has to be accounted for. We take the OEA's December 23 forecast for the general fund revenue projections over the forecast period. We assume that the new debt that will be issued has a debt level annual debt service over 20 years, and we're using a 5.5% interest rate, which is what we used last year also. Before that, we used to use 4.5%, but once the Fed started to hike rates, we moved from a 4.5% assumption to a 5.5% interest rate assumption. So we have some cushion when we go out and issue debt, and we are conservative. And we target that not more than 5% of general fund revenues will be used to pay the general fund debt service. So that limits how much debt that is issued year over year. So we don't exceed and issue too much debt, but also it's done in such a way, staggered out over the forecast period in such a way that we don't have excess amounts that we need from general fund for any particular year. So when we run the model, we come up with some numbers that we can, or before we get to that, if we go to the next slide, we just want to touch upon the general fund forecast that we see here. The basic theme is continued strength. Year over year, every forecast has been stronger, reflecting strong revenue that's been exceeding expectations. Even when we compare to the June 23 forecast versus December 23 forecast, we are higher by about half a billion. The dip that you see in 24 is coming out of the $5.6 billion kicker credit that will be paid to taxpayers in 2024. In this current OEA forecast, it comprises some long-term influencers. So if you look at the bottom, you can see it's helped by strong rebound in income tax receipts. partly due to strong income growth, but also some demographic growth. Corporate excise and income tax collections have been coming in very strong, and that trend is expected to continue. Finally, inflation really helps. One man's expenses is another man's income, and the income gets taxed. So that really helps boost the general fund revenues. For the 23-25 biennium, there are some hiccups. One is the chance of a soft landing that's taken into account. There's also some expected decline in the capital gains tax. And finally, there's the big $5.6 billion kicker credit that'll be lost to the state. Going to the next slide.
I just want to pause for a second on that graphic. I mean, it looks very much like a check mark. And as I was reviewing it, I really did see, I mean, it's noticeable what impact that has on the capacity of the next biennium. You're going to talk about it here in a moment, I imagine, Couture, but I'm struck by how significant that is and the capacity that's going to be available. So I don't know if anyone else had that reaction, but I certainly did. So just wanted to note it. Thank you.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Because if we look at the results in the table, to your point, Treasurer, for 2024, we do exceed the 5% target. Because the revenues are only $10.9 billion, instead of trying to hold the line at 5%, we actually go over and we go as much as 5.4%. But with a strong recovery in general fund revenues in 2025, we bring it back down. And then after that, we stay stable at 5%. So overall, this analysis shows that we have a capacity of 8.6 billion over the forecast period. This is in addition to the amount authorized in the bond bill. So we are going to be issuing 2.15 billion over the next 2 years, and also potentially another 66 million in the short session. And then there is another, and including that, we get 8.6 billion of capacity. To keep within the 5%, we would be issuing variable amounts every year. That is shown in the third column. And the reason why it has so many peaks and valleys has to do with how much debt is rolling off. If we have a year where there's a lot of debt rolling off, then you can replace that. But if we were to have a stable funding issuance, which is normally what we follow, then we take this 8.6 billion and distribute it evenly, and we end up with 1.075 billion per year, or $2.15 billion per biennium. And we are able to stay within the 5% for the most part, except in the year 2027, where we have some large pension obligation debt rolling off. So the principal of that amount that is coming due is rather high in that year. But once that drops off, our capacity goes up in the following years. And I'll stop for a second. Yes, sir.
Yeah, question. I don't know if it's directed at you or Jaime or somebody else on the team, but we've talked in the past about the significance of 5%, and that it is not so much that there is precision in that or the importance of having that as an average over time rather than going up and down a little bit. But 5.4% is relatively significant, it seems to me, over 5%. Part of it, not so much our decision as it is a result of the kicker. So I wonder if it's possible to anticipate whether there's a market reaction to that, or how people view the situation. Should we think about that differently, or does the market understand our unique kicker situation, and how should we think about that?
I think one stab I can take at it is, it's one thing to have a temporary problem that goes away. Yes, we go up, we spike up in 24, but then we immediately get healed in the next year. That mm-hmm. provides comfort. But if we had 5.4% in 24, 5.3% in 25, and we stayed over 5% for 3 years, that would be more worrisome. And I'm sure Jaime may want to add to it or something.
Right. And we've done a lot of work in educating the rating agencies and the various investor base as far as how the state operates and how the kicker is taken into account when constructing future budgets. So we do kind of forecast that, obviously, as best to our ability. So yes, they do kind of the first initial reaction is what's going on with this kicker. But once we've kind of lay out how the state operates and how we kind of forecast that out and constructing our budget, and they see the future growth of revenues and kind of take into account. We do have a chart later in the presentation that kind of shows kind of the impact of issuing at the full 5% going forward and kind of how that aligns with debt service. So we kind of touch on that a little bit later in the presentation as well, if you want.
Sure. Thank you. It looks like Michael might have something to add to get your hand up. Yeah, although it looks like you might be muted. You're talking. I don't hear you.
There we go. Is that better?
Yes.
Now I can hear you. There we go. Apologies all. Thank you. I also just wanted to comment in too. Part of the reason for the general fund debt service as a percentage of general fund revenues that we look at is this is one of the key indicators used by municipal analysts and rating agencies to evaluate debt burden of a municipality. States recognized as having sound debt management typically range between 5 and 10%. Determining their capacity measurements, with 5% being a frequent commitment that we see from states and other areas. And for purposes of determining ORID's capacity standard, the commission established the range between a low of 0 and a high of 10%. So because we're sitting there and floating right at that 5%, there isn't really a lot of cause for alarm based on the forecast, because we're still within where we expect to see and where we've established in the past.
Thank you. Yeah, I didn't have a sense that we were out of range with our peers. My sense was just that the market likes to see stability and not variation, whatever you have established as a target. So you've all added to my understanding. I appreciate that. Does that prompt any other questions or comments from other commission members or commissioners, I should say? I don't see any. Okay. Thanks for the tolerance of my question. Let's keep going.
So if we take a look at the next slide, so what we've done is try to project some sensitivity analysis for changes in the revenue forecast and changes in interest rates. Starting with the change in revenue forecast, we said, okay, what happens if we have a 10% decline and a 10% increase? So the base issuance capacity is 8.6 billion. And that creates an average of 2.15 billion per biennium. There's a 10% decline in revenues. We lose 1.5 billion of that capacity. 10% increase in revenues. It's a symmetrical 1.5 billion rise in capacity. And if we were to look at what it implies in terms of issuance capacity per biennium, we drop to 1.8 billion, or we rise up to 2.5 billion. The impact of a 1% higher or 1% lower interest rate change, the impact is less, almost half of the revenue. So revenue is very important. Interest rate variability is not as, it doesn't wag the dog as much. If there's a 1% hike in interest rates, we lose about 840 million in issuance capacity, and our biennial capacity drops up to about 2 billion. If rates drop by 1%, we almost pick up a billion of additional capacity and get to 2.4 billion. And that's just the way interest rates behave. It has to do with the duration and convexity of interest rates and its impact on debt service. That about concludes our section on the general fund debt capacity. If anyone has questions, we can stop here. Otherwise, we'll be moving on to the lottery section.
I guess it would be foolish of me not to take advantage of the fact that we have a nationally known Fed watcher amidst in our ranks. Any comments, Dr. Dewey, on the interest rate environment and well, these variabilities?
Yeah, I think, well, interest rates are going to go down. So I would bet you're more likely to be on the lower end of that than the higher end of it at this juncture. So so that's good. That will provide some cushion on that side. You know what? I don't know if we put this in a report, and I have to go back and look at it. But do we add in the comparison of the base case that we're predicting this year to the base case that we did last year? Like, I mean, what was our annual average per biennium last year? I can't remember.
Okay. Yeah, it was, the overall amount was about $1 billion less.
Okay. And the only reason I add that is that's kind of your clarification around the kicker, is that, yes, we have this big kicker, but you still get more money than we thought, right? Last year,
last year was 7.755, the number that corresponds to the 8.665, so almost $1 billion less.
Right.
That's good context.
That's just what I try to add into the context around the kicker, is that everybody looks at the kicker and says, you know, the lost resources per se, but then sort of ignores just how much more resources have been added over that period.
Yeah. It's always the compared to what question. It's a good one.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and kind of to add to that, as far as like rent interest rate assumptions, I mean, obviously we're being very conservative using the 5.5 here. But you know, we have gotten, you know, obviously the same information that the Fed is kind of halted at the moment. There will be starting to cut at some point. The market's probably kind of predicting 4 to 6 cuts. The real question is when that kind of begins and when we kind of enter the market for our issuance cycle to kind of try and take advantage of that.
Which is also a good segue to a point that we always try to make the legislature, legislators, listen up, please, to give us the flexibility, to give this world-class team the flexibility to take advantage of those market conditions. So appreciate making the opportunity to make that point again. Thumbs up from Senator Taylor. Thank you. Let's keep going.
Okay. Michael?
Good morning still, everybody. My name is Mike Thompson. I am new to the debt management team, starting in September, but not new to debt management. I was priorly with the City of Portland, worked with them for a couple of years in their debt management team, and then with the Bonneville Power Administration, with their debt models for Energy Northwest as well. I'm really excited to be here, excited to get to learn about new things that the state of Oregon does. And I am here to explain what the debt capacity is for lottery and why we monitor it, which is something I really wasn't sure of beforehand. So it was great to get a lot of information coming in on this. State utilizes the lottery revenue to issue lottery revenue bonds, which funds programs related to economic development, public education, and environmental welfare. Excuse me. Being able to calculate this capacity allows us to better evaluate our stewardship of the state bonded debt and plan for future projects. Next slide, please. As of fiscal year end 2023, we had $1.3 billion in lottery revenue bonds outstanding. This is up from $1.17 the prior year. Now, the bonds have funded many programs, included those listed here on the slide. And in calculating our debt capacity, we utilize the OEA analysis from December 2023, forecasting lottery revenues over the forecasted period from 2024 to 2033. We assume the issuance of all of the $500 million biennium authorized new money bonds, and then we structure it around the current debt that we have in the same way that we structure the general fund level debt service over 20 years with the same 5.5% interest rate. We also have to stick to an indenture that we have requiring the unobligated net lottery proceeds, which is anything minus winnings and expenses to include the debt service, to be at a minimum of 4 times the maximum annual debt service coverage, or debt service may not exceed 25% of the unobligated net lottery proceeds. Next slide, please. Here we can see that forecasts continue to show rebounds in lottery revenue with continued growth expected, including upward revision for the 2023 to 2025 biennium as the economy and consumer discretionary incomes continue to steady and show growth. Lottery revenues available for transfer are expected to continue growing thanks to a healthy job market, continuing to fuel the demand and the continued popularity in gaming. Next slide, please.
Can you, this might be an unfair question, but in the past, I might have been more confident in guessing what the pent-up demand referred to. Do you have a sense of what has been causing it to be pent up and what's changed?
I think is this just kind of a continuation of everything with COVID, people trying to get out and connect and reestablish kind of that new normal. One of the things that has also been seen is the popularity with gifting and the popularity, like I've seen a lot of different ways that it's been used, stocking stuffers, things like that. But the pent-up demand continuing to do it is just seeing a lot of people who have more disposable income than they were accustomed to and trying to get into that equilibrium, kind of seeing it kind of in and out with different expenses and kind of that hangover from COVID a little bit still.
Are we at the tail end of that? Are we going to, I mean, the pent up is going to end at some point, I assume.
I think, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to just add that I think we are getting close to the tail end of that, except for the fact that, you know, a lot of people are going to receive a big, pretty sizable kicker.
Good
that,
point.
You know, maybe that they may be pointed towards this direction. So, you know, it's still kind of up in the air to, depending on what impact we may see of that next year.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll sort of add the other thing that happened last year is gas prices fell a lot in the second half of the year, and that boosts disposable spending power pretty quickly for a lot of people, and maybe this demographic as well, certainly. And then ironically, on the gift thing, my mother gave us some lottery, you know, scratch it tickets for stocking stuffers this year, and she's never done that in the past. So I won't take that as a real data point, but it was interesting.
That is. That's good.
Mm-hmm. I got okay. some too. That's why I made the comment. Like I hadn't really seen this. So, okay, seeing this happen.
We got two data points now. That's good.
That's right.
Thank you.
thank you. So, looking at the debt capacity, the December 2023 OEA forecast provided for a strong rebound in lottery revenues, resulting in a debt capacity of $2.15 billion. This is a $150 million increase from the prior year. And based on the forecast and using our averaging approach that we talked about a little bit with the general fund, issuance capacity is approximately $530 million in each biennium or $265 million annually over the forecasted period. This has increased $25 million over the biennium from the prior year and approximately 12 and a half per year. Next slide, please. On this slide, we see our sensitivity analysis highlighting the impacts of changes in the lottery revenue and the interest rate forecasts. As with the general fund, we examined with the same 10% increase and decrease in revenue and the same 1% change in interest rate forecast. We see that if we have a decline to revenue, our base case, debt capacity reduces by just over $363 million, whereas the 10% increase is the inverse. The changes in the interest rate forecast is more of what I was looking at because that seems more likely to happen. As we've talked about, the decrease in interest rate could see our capacity increase by over $230 million, whereas if it goes higher, we could see that decrease by $200 million. And that is what I have for the lottery section. Does anybody have any questions?
I've been asking them as they occurred to me. Any other commissioners have any questions or comments? don't see any. So let's keep going. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you very much. I'm going to turn it over to Colin.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Colin.
All right. I'll be discussing the state's net tax supported debt. Next slide, please. The net tax supported debt includes general fund supported debt, pension obligation bonds, certificates of participation and other appropriations debt, lottery revenue bonds, and state highway user tax revenue bonds as determined by the rating agencies in their evaluation of the state's overall long-term debt burden. Next slide, please. This chart contains the actual details of Oregon's net tax supported debt for fiscal years 22 and 23 and projected details for fiscal years 24 and 25. At the end of 2023's fiscal year, Oregon's net tax supported debt was $10.05 billion and is projected to increase to $11.67 billion by the end of the 23-25 biennium. Net tax supported debt as a percent of personal income is expected to grow from 3.6% at the end of the end of fiscal year 23 to a projected 3.74% by the end of the 25 biennium. Next slide, please. This chart shows the components of Oregon's net tax supported debt as stacked lines compared to Moody's 50 state median as the green bars. Oregon's net tax-supported debt per capita as of fiscal year 23 is $2,339, which is above the median of $1,178 for all states, as listed by Moody's. And Oregon's net tax-supported debt to personal income of 3.6% in fiscal year 2023 is above the median of 2.2% for all states. Next slide, please. Oregon currently ranks among the top states in terms of pension funding status, which is a measure of pension assets relative to pension liability.
Just to be clear, that means that we are among the best funded, right? When you say top,
yes.
We have to make that clear. When we talk about investment stuff, sometimes the investments have a counter intuitive design around percentile, so I always have to make that clear. In this case, top means we are well funded.
Correct. The higher we are here, the more funded we are.
Yeah. Is there a message, a method? Maybe you're going to get to this too, but this comment reminds me of presentations we've had in the past that account for the relative size of our states, because. Yeah, I mean, here's a good place to look at this, looking at Vermont and New Hampshire and their relatively small size, whereas we got more ODOT debt because we got more roads to cover.
The next slide covers that, and okay. Sort of, because we have our numbers based on a per capita basis as opposed to a absolute number basis. Beyond that, no. I wouldn't say we have it broken out by state size, but I can get that data.
Well, it's important for us to keep that in mind that those other smaller states don't have as much transportation infrastructure to fund.
Got it.
Thank you.
Let's see. Okay, so Oregon currently ranks among the top states in terms of pension funding status, which is a measure of pension assets relative to pension liability. The chart below from S&P shows the pension funded ratio for states across the nation. Using fiscal year 2022 data provided by S&P, Oregon ranked 13th highest among all states with a pension funded ratio of 84.6%. And in October 2020-21, PERS reduced the assumed rate of return from 7.2% to 6.9%, which was viewed favorably by rating agencies. Next slide, please. And this chart shows the unfunded pension and OPEB liability per capita for fiscal year 2022 for the nation. The blue arrow points to Oregon, which shows Oregon's per capita unfunded pension and OPEB liability is among the lowest levels when compared to other states. And Oregon ranks 15th lowest in pension and OPEB liability per capita among all of the 50 states that we have here. And additionally, Oregon's fiscal year 2022 pension funded status of 84.6% is above the median for all the for all states of the same period, which is at about 74%. Next slide, please. And are there any questions for this section?
Oh, yeah, Representative Nathan, please.
Thank you. Could you back up to the previous slide? Thank you. That was a very important point there, and that dovetails with the treasurer's comments just a minute ago about how to interpret the numbers. Does high mean good or high mean bad? And this really shows this. A few slides ago, there was a comparison of Oregon's overall debt compared to the median of states, and it looked like we have a little more than the median. But I think this demonstrates that the majority of that is not coming from this pension part. It's coming from other choices that we're making to fund other kinds of programs. Is that the right interpretation?
That's correct. And to the treasurer's point, the size of the state and the amount of infrastructure capital improvements that we have to undertake compared to some of these smaller states that that don't have the same type of problems we do leads to how much additional debt we will debt burden, you know, the on a per capita basis that our citizens would have to carry. But it wouldn't be related to pension or OPEB type debt, and that's visible here in this chart.
Thank you. A brief follow-up. I think it would be really interesting for ODOT to provide, Oregon Department of Transportation, to provide us with a chart that shows how Oregon's miles of roads compares to how many miles of roads other states are maintaining. For state systems. And as you pointed out, Connecticut is really different than Oregon. We have our landmass is just huge compared to other states, but also road miles that we're maintaining. If we could just have that chart, I think that would be very useful.
Thank you, Representative. Great.
With that, I'll hand it over to Jaime to discuss the state debt issuance considerations.
Thank you, Colin.
Thank you, Colin. Next slide, please. So previously, we discussed some of these components of the state's debt, which include general obligation and these direct revenue debt. So here in these two tables or the charts, we break down the general obligation debt for fiscal year 23. And we see the trend that we kind of highlighted previously, the fact that 11Q bonds have been the fastest growing component of the general obligation bonds. So as of June 30th, 2023, they represent about 44% of outstanding general obligation debt. And again, these 11Q bonds are directed for improvements related to state-owned and operated real and personal property. Including incorporating funding for the LIFT program. So the second component here of the state's overall indebtedness is direct revenue bonds, and the highway user tax revenue bond program, which ODOT uses, is the largest component of these bonds. So as of June 30th, 2023, it represents approximately 54% of outstanding direct revenue debt. ODOT continues to have a very strong capital plan, which include a number of improvements, and we expect to see significant financings into the future.
Am I remembering right that you get into the pension obligations a little bit later? I wanted to hear about the trend, if those are stable, increasing, decreasing. I think there might be, you might get into that a little bit later.
Yes, okay. I can talk about that in the next slide.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So here, you know, the state maintains a very conservative debt service profile, with over 50% of its debt amortizing by 2023, and we continue to mention POBs, pension obligation bonds, because they are scheduled to fully amortize in 2027. So as you can see here in the chart, There's a corresponding decline in debt service after 2027. Another item that we can point out here on this chart is the majority of the debt service is to commence in the next biennium, which results in the majority of bonds being issued on the latter part of the biennium, which this way of structuring has worked when we were persistently in falling interest rate environment. We would recommend a more watchful approach to be considered now that we are experiencing, a steady, more rate, steady rise in rate environment, or suggesting a more even approach to issuing debt over the course of the biennium rather than saving the debt service for the next biennium. But to point out that yellow line, if we continue to issue debt at the 5% target, as we have been, or close to it, that yellow line would represent the debt service growth over the time period. Next slide, please. One more. Okay. So here we have the Oregon School Bond Guarantee Program, which is a program that is very valuable to local governments and school districts, community college across the state. So the program has been heavily used since the demise of bond insurers in the capital markets, the use of bond insurers. The program has been, if you look at the light blue color in the chart, it shows the debt service that's associated to the bonds issued by local school districts and community college that are guaranteed by the state of Oregon. The state is currently guaranteeing about $10.1 billion of debt that is issued by school districts and community colleges. Most of the school districts that borrow have a very good rating and utilize their general obligation backing for that debt. But in addition, we have what we call a fund diversion agreement agreements that we use to enhance credit ratings. And if necessary, pay pension obligation bonds debt service by local governments. So the fund diversion agreements make a claim on the different money that's due to local jurisdictions by which the funds would be deposited to the trustee to pay the debt service. So if we look at the bar chart, you can see the pension obligation bonds that are supported by the fund diversion agreements of the state aid and the guarantee of state aid from the OSBG program have been both increasing over time.
On your last bullet point, is there anything to say about those four school districts? Do they tend to be smaller, or anything that's common amongst them?
They are some of the smaller districts. It's four districts that have exceeded their what we calculate would be their state aid. In comparison to the full $10 billion that's outstanding, it would be a negligible amount, but yeah. It is a trend we want to keep an eye on and make sure that, right. Everybody's sticking within the amount of aid that they're receiving.
And certainly would be a big deal for those districts themselves.
Right.
Thank you.
Next slide, please. So in 2019, SB 1049 was enacted. It was codified with ORS 238-697, and it requires the treasurer to report annually to the commission, provide an annual report on bonds issued by public bodies, which will contain information from such as actual interest rates on the bonds, the projected rate of return on the bonds, and the actual rate of return on the bonds. In 2021, the MDAC, Municipal Debt Advisory Commission, approved administrative rule amendments to permit or provide guidelines for municipalities to issue pension obligation bonds under this new statute. Since that time, there has been approximately $1.88 billion in pension obligation bonds. And last year, with a high interest rate environment, we did not see pretty much any activity in the issuance of pension obligation bonds.
Before we leave this slide, we need to give Representative Nathanson credit for this bill and this statute. I think it's a good thing that those issuers have to get some independent analysis. So Thank you, Representative.
Yeah, definitely. Next slide, please. So private activity volume cap, it continues to be a national issue, especially for the amount that's needed across the country. So there's definitely a shortage of availability of private activity volume cap. The volume cap is not really bonding authority, but it's more of the ability to use an IRS facility to permit entities to issue tax-exempt bonds for qualified projects that might have some type of private component. So in general, the legislature authorizes each year in the biennium the volume cap that's available to the state at the starting point. So in 2023, the legislature authorized for each calendar year 24 and 25 approximately $450 million in volume cap to housing, $58.5 million to the PAB committee for statewide projects, and $1 million to Oregon Business Development for economic development projects. The amount of private activity bond volume cap that's available to each state is adjusted annually. This is based on an IRS per capita factor that they update once a year, and also population updates. The IRS updated their per capita factor this year to 125. What that means for our volume cap is that increased the calendar year 2024 allocation by $19.6 million. So added with the $58 million that was originally allocated to the committee, the committee now roughly has about $78 million to allocate to qualifying projects. But obviously, there's a continued focus on housing. The committee expects significant competition for this scarce resource. Next slide, please. So multifamily conduit revenue bond issuance. So in this slide, we can see some history on the multifamily conduit issuance program. Since 2018, as represented in this chart, we see a sharp increase in issuance in these type of bonds. The primary purpose for this program is a lift affordable housing and permanent supportive housing. These revenue bonds are issued on behalf of public and private entities for the development and rehabilitation of low-income multifamily housing. And during 2023, approximately 29 conduit bond issuance were completed for an estimated $511 million. In fiscal year 24, we have 4 deals that have been completed, approximately $71 million, and expect by the end of the year, the end of fiscal year 24, to close an additional 13 more issuances for approximately $397 million. Also, as of May of 23, approximately $717 million in Article 11Q bonds have been issued in support of these LIFT and PSH programs. So real quick, I wanted to point out that the small dip in 23. So that dip is in response to housing making some modifications to its legal agreements with its lenders to make sure that the LIFT program was in agreement with the bond covenants under Article 11. This happened over the summer, so it kind of caused a small dip in the issuance there. Not a trend we expect to continue. We expect that to go right back up in 24. Next slide, please. Okay, one more. Okay, so in conclusion, the December 2023 forecast anticipates a soft landing out of a high inflationary environment with limited impact on the general fund and lottery revenues. The record rebate kicker in fiscal year 24 will have general fund debt service exceeding the 5% target that we have sought to maintain, yet our capacity over the long term remains strong at $8.665 billion, resulting in $2.15 billion per biennium for the general fund. The lottery revenue has continued to demonstrate robust recovery, although we know that there is the potential for volatility in that revenue stream. So the projected revenues for lottery provide about $2.15 billion of new lottery debt capacity over the next four bienniums, which translates to about approximately $530 million in each biennium over the forecast period. And finally, the state continues to maintain very strong credit ratings with the general obligation credit and the lottery revenue bonds. Evaluation and management of key revenue and budgetary risk factors is very important, and along with the concept of increasing reserves and having a strong liquidity position to help us manage through tough times. So with that, unless there's any questions, I thank you for your time and this opportunity to present.
Thank you, Jaime. Thank you, team. As usual, we covered a lot of really good content. I think we had some good discussion, but we're not quite at the end. So let's see if there are other comments or questions from commissioners. I can see Representative Nathan and Dr. Dewey. We know Senator Taylor's here. Director Leslie, we're getting to the end of the content. I'm not going to call on anybody. This is not an academic thing where we're going to do cold calls, but I just want to make sure everybody has a chance. So I'm stalling for a moment in case anyone is formulating their question or comment, but I don't see any. Oh, Senator Taylor,
excuse me,
please.
Treasury, I just have a question. So with the for the short session, obviously the governor has her housing request, which would require quite a bit of bonding. Timing-wise, how and when will we find out what the, for lack of a better term, impact will be on bonding to be able to bond other things besides just housing? Like, what is the timeline because of the short session, because it's such a large ask by the governor? I don't know, you'll answer it, maybe someone else on your team.
Yeah, I'm pausing to let them answer, but I think this is the forecast. We're not likely to have another update until there is another quarterly until we have another input from the Office of Economic Analysis, because so much of this is based on
But there'll be a response, right, from your office, right, or not?
Because
the governor's request is so large for housing, for bonding, you'll just be staying out. I guess this is, maybe I should just talk to you offline about it. I'm just trying to understand how will the legislature and what will the timing be of how much will be consumed percentage wise and what will be left available for other types of projects.
Yeah, I think that that's definitely a conversation we can have individually anytime. But the numbers here are sort of the numbers. This is what we have based on the quarterly forecast, the anticipation of where interest rates are and where they might likely be, and then it's up to the legislature and advocates to have that conversation about, you know, based on these inputs, how much of that available capacity do we want to devote to the various purposes and so on. Jaime, others, you can certainly correct anything I've said.
Sure. Just to be clear, I understand, obviously, the report, and that's what we're here to talk about. But since I had you and your whole team here, I was more using that opportunity, since I had you and your whole team here who knows debts and the bonds and bonding so well. That was why I was asking. I understand that we're here to discuss this, but at the same time, the short session's around the corner and the governor has a very significant request. And I just didn't know, and maybe it's too politically charged of a question to ask, and your team doesn't have to, but.
I will answer my own personal opinion on that, and then they can correct anything I get wrong technically. I'm always nervous about, just like I am as an investor, about putting too much in any one thing. And there are obviously a lot of needs for the state, and things can change and so on. So I get nervous about that as a general matter on anything. But that is, there's no question that housing is a key factor, and we got to look at all the tools that are available to us. So we can certainly talk more offline if you want to.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah, of course.
And if someone from your team wants to respond, I just was curious because I don't really have this opportunity to sit with your people like this very often. So I was just curious.
They are world class. Absolutely. Please chime in.
And I will add that, I mean, you know, we are, obviously we are talking to about future projections and future biennium capacity, but we did touch on, you know, what was included for 23 to 25. And I will add that in there was significant of bonding capacity allocated to housing, both on the general fund side and on the direct revenue side. There is, like Couture had mentioned on his slide, there is a bit of allocation or capacity that's left over on the general fund side that can also be, during the short session, directed towards a certain area or a certain type of focus. But that would be what would be left over from the recommendation of the capacity between for the 23 to 25 biennium.
Thank you. That's very helpful.
Thanks. Dr. Dewey, your hands up.
Yeah, I would only add one thing to that, and you know, and correct me if I'm wrong, Treasurer. But I mean, technically, we're just recommending 5%, right? The legislature could always say, forget that, right? Go to 6%. Now, I'm not advising that. I'm just saying that that's not in our remit to tell the legislature what to do on that front. And the second thing is that we've had this conversation along the efficient use of capital along other ways. And so, you know, the sort of story is with these sort of asks is, are they being used efficiently? Right. And so if the ask is going to drive, is going to be looking for, you know, housing that costs, you know, $750,000 a unit, whereas, you know, the private sector can build it for $300,000. One would ask whether or not that would be appropriate use of this kind of bonding capacity. Those are, you know, I think two kind of relevant questions within the line of stuff we've talked about in the past. You know, the efficient use of these resources.
You're totally right. Thank you. It is the legislature's authority. We just have the recommendation, and we point to the implications of a decision to depart from that as reason not to. But you're right; they're not obligated. The legislature's not obligated to stick to this, but we sure hope they do. And again, I think you're asking the right compared to what question on your second point. Totally agree.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Taylor. Other comments or questions on the commission? Okay. Jaime, can you or someone on your team remind us of the calendar here? We've got a draft report in everyone's email inbox. We are heading towards delivery of that, and we have an opportunity for people to provide additional comment and feedback. Is that right? Maybe you could help us on the calendar too.
Sure. Yes, that's right. So we would like, if possible, comments or any type of revisions back by the end of day Monday, the 22nd, if possible.
Very good. And we do not need to convene again. This is the matter of feedback and comments and so on. My sense of it, having read through it, is that this is very much on target. Certainly welcome refinements and so on, but I will be surprised if there are major issues. Hopefully all of you have had a chance to at least skim it and can indicate sort of generally if we're on the right direction, and then hear from you if you have additional things by the 22nd, and then we'll be headed towards submitting that. Is that right, Jaime?
Yeah, we'll definitely recirculate it once we have all comments and any small revisions in there to make and point out any changes that were made. That way, we can kind of after that shortly send it over to publishing.
Right. Perfect. Okay.
Great. And yeah, the only thing that I would sort of add, and I can't remember the opening letter, but you know, if there was some way to sort of you know, make sure that it's understood that despite the kicker, there are in fact more resources being distributed through this than we projected last year.
That's a great suggestion. Let's do that, Jaime.
Okay.
Okay. Pausing just a little longer in case. Yes, Representative Nathanson, please.
Thank you. I appreciate this kind of an opportunity. It's different than an exchanging serial email messages. The previous comment was reminding us that there are additional resources. Yes, it was a historically large kicker, astonishingly large in the multiple billions of dollars. But beside that, I can't remember, and I haven't finished reading all the detail of the report yet, how we discuss there was this really big influx of federal money. And there was a long tail on that. Some of that, it wasn't spent immediately. It was invested in certain things that was oftentimes sent then to county and city governments or other organizations to spend the money. That's pretty much spent out by now. There could be, if Oregon is successful, for example, in competing for federal funds for rail, we could have a big chunk of money coming to help us improve our rail system. But we don't know that yet. How do we talk about, we had a bunch of money, and that big bunch is now just about all spent out.
Yeah, I remember it being reflected in a particular place, but I don't want to steal your thunder, Jaime.
I think we would have to go back and look at previous reports to see how we touched on that and how we want to kind of touch on the fact that a lot of those resources are going to no longer be available that we would use that were previously used on our more of a pay-as-you-go type system for capital improvement type projects.
Right. I think that's it. It was mentioned in the slides here about the sort of soft landing, the end of federal influx, those kinds of things. And I think the second point Jaime made there is important because a lot of those things are for specific purposes, not necessarily just general revenue that could be used to bond against. So it's sort of a double effect in that sense. It's ending and the other stuff was specifically targeted. Right. But I think it is reflected in both the slides and the report.
Right.
Yeah, it would certainly speak to, again, the resources that are available to fund, you know, a major housing ask relative to the fact that you're losing some resources that might have been funding some capital investment over the past couple of years.
Right. Right. Okay. Just one more pause in case there's anything there. So again, 20 seconds. We want to hear from you, and then we will get ready to publish. I always enjoy these meetings because I feel like I'm back in an academic setting, not only because of the presence of an actual professor here, but all of you have contributions to my increased understanding. So appreciate you all being here and being part of this exchange. Jaime, have we covered everything we need to?
Yes, I think so.
Okay, so here comes the virtual gavel again. Your last chance to slow us down if we need to cover anything else. Okay, we're going to adjourn the meeting. Again, thank you for all your help. We'll hear from you hopefully by the 22nd and get these reports off to Representative Nathan, Senator Taylor, and your colleagues. We're depending on you to deliver this message to your colleagues and be responsible. So,
well, thank you, Treasurer Reed, and thank you, obviously, Representative Nathanson, but your whole team for working on this. I know that this is greatly condensed, but I can only imagine how much work it takes to pull and bring all this together and to have it be accurate and the awesome level of responsibility that you have to manage this level of debt. So thank you to you and to your whole staff for everything you do. I really appreciate it, actually.
Great team. Thanks, everybody. Be safe. Stay warm.
Thank you. Thank you.